My problem is Anna Baker, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here tonight, and I want you to consider very seriously before this meeting is over whether I've taken the second step or not. And that's entirely up to your judgment, and but please wait and take my inventory face to face. We are approaching a great holiday season, and as we do, we reminisce. And we do that when we tell what it was like and what happened and what we're like now. But I want to go back further than that. I want to go back when I was a little girl and everybody in my family was a school teacher. And it was my ambition to be one. My very first talk was made at the Bessemer Group. There are a lot of folks there who here tonight who were there then. And one of them came up to me after the meeting and said, "I knew you were a school teacher." My second talk was made at the Western Group in Birmingham, and someone came up after the meeting and said, "I knew you were a Sunday school teacher." Well, now, to one of those, I do not claim credit. I am not a school teacher. Before alcohol took full sway of my life, and since then, I have been a Sunday school teacher for many years, and I do not let that get in my way when I make an AA talk. But this judgment was passed upon me. So tonight I'm going back to that period in time when I said, "Let's plike, where I'm a school teacher." And I got all the little children around me in the neighborhood, and we'd play like I was a school teacher. And that's what I'm going to do tonight for a few moments. I'm not going to talk overtime, but I'm using part of my time to do this. I do things like this for my group every once in a while, and they either afraid to tell me they don't like it, or they tell me something, you know. So I have asked my two good friends, Jim and Mickey, to get me 6 Al-Anons and 6 AAs and line them right up in front of here, because they're my pupils tonight. They're not going to say a word, but they're my pupils. You got your 6? Okay. You got your 6? Well, you better get you some more. Get some volunteers if you can't have my pointed jaw. These are my monitors I got working now. We're not going to initiate you into a new fraternity. Y'all got too big a division in there. Snuggle up a little closer. Now I've got one more monitor over here. My sponsee. I don't like the word pigeon. Marguerite. Give each one of these one of those cards, and don't show it to the audience till I call out. I know it. Don't reveal it to the audience until I call out. Take the rubber band off, hon, and you'll get along better. All right, class, attention. Now, when I call out your letter, you hold it up so the rest of the class may see. T is for 12, the steps we all know. H is for honesty, by which we will grow. A is for answers, now we can think. N is for no nonsense when it comes to taking a drink. K is for knowledge that comes mighty slow. S for serenity we're beginning to know. G is for giving to others our loving care. I is for inventory as our past we lay bare. V is for vision to see one day at a time. I is for inner light which makes our eyes shine. N is for nearness to a higher power above. G is for gratitude as we share our love. 12 is the number in the word thanksgiving, and 12 are the steps we took to show our thanks living. Thank you, class. You may be seated now. My mama always told me to thank my host and hostess for their hospitality. And I have long wanted to be here. This is the realization of a dream. My sobriety date is October the 15th, 1962. And ever since I came into the program, I have had nudges and invitations to make this trip, I hear you say, to the mountaintop, and I like that. And I wanted to come. I was a working gal part of the time, and part of the time I wasn't, but I went to every Southeastern, every state. I went to assemblies. I went to a lot of conventions out of my own state. I was privileged to go very early on in my sobriety to Toronto, Canada, to my first international convention. But I never made it here until I was invited this time, and I do want to thank you. It's already been so wonderful that I just don't find words to express my appreciation for being included. Now, I cannot tell my story, and that is what we're supposed to do. And every time I say I'm tired of my story, I go into a meeting and somebody says, I've got a gal here, I want to hear you. And so I go back and tell my story. So I've come to the conclusion that what the big book tells me is correct. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Today I am a double winner. I am a member of the Centerpoint Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Birmingham, Alabama. And I am a member of the Al-Anon Family Group, which meets on Thursday morning also in Centerpoint in Birmingham, Alabama. I am grateful to both programs. It is not original with me. I heard a forerunner, a gal who was in AA and Al-Anon, to say that she came to AA to save her life and to Al-Anon to save her sanity, and this is true. 26 and a half years ago, I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and 10 years ago, I came into the program of Al-Anon. I did not reach either one of these programs the easy way. I was very sick when I arrived for my first meeting at both AA and for Al-Anon, and I had to reach a bottom in both my experiences of life before I found a way out of my dilemma. So I will incorporate into my story of my life in AA, because I cannot tell it now without telling what a part Al-Anon also played in my life. I was 25 years old before I had my first drink. Alcohol was never served in the home into which I was brought up, and I knew nothing about it at all. I was married, and I had two children, and I thought a perfectly wonderful life. My husband was manager for one of the largest appliance companies in the state of Alabama, and therefore we played host and hostess to a number of visiting delegations from all over the Southeast when they came to Birmingham for meetings, and of course we were permitted to buy alcohol to serve anywhere we wanted to serve it, and we had a unlimited expense account for entertaining the customers. And of course I know now this was a bad place for both my first husband and for me to be in, because he never knew the program as I know Alcoholics Anonymous, but as I view the total picture now, I know that he, too, was an alcoholic. And I'm very sorry that we did not find this program in his lifetime, because he was a great and wonderful person. He was my knight in shining armor, and we were very much in love, and life was very, very good to us. He went into his own business and was very successful at it. We continued to entertain in the same old manner. And the first drink I ever took was at the Birmingham Country Club, where I was hostess to a large group of out-of-town appliance distributors. And my husband had told me, and oh, wasn't this a terrible thing? You may go to town and buy any dress you want for this occasion. Did I have a ball? And of course, I felt like I was the hostess with the mostest, because I had this very glamorous evening gown, and here were all these people coming in, and I was responsible for their happiness for the evening, and I was delighted to be. My husband brought and set in front of me the most beautiful drink I have ever seen in my life. I later found out it was a frozen daiquiri. Now, I don't know whether I had one or whether I had two, but I know that that drink was not important to me, because I can't say that I was an alcoholic from that first drink. Because I don't know whether it was 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, or 3 years before I had another drink. When I think about my story, I just don't really know how long it was. But when I did start drinking, it must have taken hold pretty rapidly, because I used to say in my talk when I had 10 years sobriety that I had 10 years of drinking without a problem, that I had 10 years of drinking with a problem, and that I now had 10 years of drinking without a problem. And I'm grateful to say that data, those years of sobriety have a little better than double now. As I told you, I celebrated my 23rd birthday on October the 15th just this year. And I'm very, very grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to all the good people who have entered into my life since I've been in this program. The only listing in the telephone book 26 and a half years ago was the Five Points group, which many of you know. In fact, I went to a meeting in Honolulu and was told, I've been in your club room. And everywhere we went over the Southeast, we met people who had been in our club room. Many, many people passed through that group of Five Points, and many, many groups stemmed off from that group. I was a member of that group for 10 years. And then when I moved out into really suburbia, I was working at a job, and I had taken on a vacancy that was left by one of the members of our group. We were very involved in public information at that time, and I was co-chairman and then chairman of public information for the Birmingham area for Alcoholics Anonymous, and we held monthly meetings at a downtown hotel to try to distribute information to the public on what AA was and what it could do for people. So I took on a job that was left open by the death of one of my members at a local institution for not really a recovery program. We didn't have them at that day and time. But it was the only place in our city where alcoholics could get help. We couldn't get an alcoholic who needed hospitalization into any of the big hospitals in Birmingham. We tried very hard to set up some sort of a program like that and could not. But this was a private institution, and by the way, I was treated there at one time. But I was working there as a volunteer and conducted the AA meeting once a week and tried to help in every way that I could, set up a program for trying when we sent people out to be sure that they had a contact in AA in whatever town they were going to. We were a forerunner of what's really being done on a much larger scale now. And so I had not been going to my Five Points meeting. I had lived a great distance away from my group. I even got to the point where I was mailing in my little check every month if I couldn't get up there to a meeting. But I wanted to always say I was a member of the Five Points group. And it was the fact that my second husband, had a relapse at this time. I get way ahead of my story. I make me notes and then don't follow them. But this is what brought me, I'm trying to tell you about my membership and my qualifications as an alcoholic and my membership in the Center Point group. I then went into the Center Point group and have been a member there for 13 years. I was only five blocks from my group meeting, and my car just automatically went up there three times a week. I didn't have to drive. It just went up there. And now I have moved away, way away, 30 miles from my group. And having had eye surgery this past year, I have not been able to drive my car at night to get to the nearest AA group. Thank God he provides a way for all of us. I am now attending on Wednesday a group meeting at a Lutheran church not too far from my home, which is a woman's group. Now, I like co-educational groups. I was brought up in it. I adopted me a sponsor, a man, after I'd been sober a good while. And a lot of you knew him. I adopted Ted C. as my second sponsor after my first one moved away. And so I am missing a great deal. I was cleaning out that vacant house when my phone rang, and Jim D. was on the telephone and says, Anna, we want you to go up to Mount Eagle as one of our speakers, and I'll call you later and tell you which time we want you to speak, and so on and so forth. I said, I'll go. I was dirty. I was tired. I was exhausted from the move, but I was delighted to get this little contact with AA. And I want to tell you another miracle, and then I'll go back and try to pick up my story at the beginning. I had been in this new apartment 24 hours when my phone rang, and guess what it was? I was needed for a 12-step call. And I was so happy. I cried because I felt so isolated from my group. I was in contact with them by phone every day, some of them. But yet I felt isolated. This was the thing, one of the things, there were two things that made me not want to move from my neighborhood. One, if I got down to the highway and turned left, I went about 3 blocks to the Presbyterian Church where my AA group met. If I turned this way, I went about 3 blocks to the church of my choice. And these were the two reasons, and my wonderful, wonderful neighbors, that made me feel like I didn't want to leave that area. But I have missed my group more than any part of it. Because as I was, and I'm going to be able, I know, to make this contact with a neighborhood group. The Hoover group is not too far from me. I've wandered very far away from my outline, and I'll go back and try to pick it up. I was about 25 years old when I had this first drink, and I've told you that I did drink for 10 years without a problem and 10 years with a problem. The last 5 years of that drinking was very, very hard. And I couldn't drink all the time. I had to quit drinking long enough to get well to get drunk again because I was too sick to keep on drinking. And this was the pattern of my drinking. I would go a month, 3 months without drinking, get myself feeling pretty good, and go right back at it again. And it sounds perfectly insane, and we know when we get a little bit sober that this is indeed insanity. I had 2 young children in my home. I was very involved in community service. I was very involved in my church. I was a den mother for the Cub Scouts, and I took all the leadership training to become a Girl Scout leader when my daughter was ready for Girl Scouting. I worked with the youth movement, and even after my drinking became a problem for me, was the director of the youth camps for my church. Of course, I did manage to control my drinking while we were at this wonderful Camp Sumatonga, some of you go to. And so this was the way it happened for me. Now, I did not know anything about alcoholism. I knew I had a problem. I finally became aware. I was hospitalized several times in Birmingham, but I wasn't really given any help. And when I went to this institution I was telling you about, which, what would they call it, the Hillcrest, Hilton, what was it they call it? I don't know. Somebody told me what they called it. The Hilton Hotel of the hospitals in Birmingham for the treatment of alcoholics and drug abusers. And I was dried out there one time. And I was so grateful to be there because they told me that I was going to have a session with a psychiatrist. And I thought if I knew why I drank, I would know how to get well. And so the morning that he came into my room, he said, I was ready for him. I said, "Doctor, I do not want to be drunk." I didn't. I didn't want to feel that way. I do not want to be drunk. I do not want to drink like this. Instead of his saying, "Sit down, young'un, and I'll tell you all about it," he said, "Why do you do it? Why do you do it?" And that was the great big neon sign that loomed before me everywhere I went. I was telling somebody today, I adopted me a mother after I lost my mother across the street from me, and she was a lovely person, and she would say, "Anna, you've got everything. Why do you drink? Why do you drink?" My husband would say, "Why do you drink? Why do you drink?" And everybody would ask me this, and I didn't know why. And I wanted to know why. And I had to be in this program quite some years before why didn't make a difference to me, because it had been asked of me so very, very many times. And now I know that the why isn't important. I'm kind of like a fellow we had in the Five Points Club room one night, and when he got up to talk, he just murdered the King's English. And I just thought, well, I'm just going to have a hard time sitting here listening to him. And he said something that was written indelibly on my mind. He says, "Some folks say it's an obsession of the mind. And some folks say it's an allergy of the body. But you know, I don't care. Whatever it is, I got it." And that's the way I feel about it now. Whatever it is, I got it. I got it. My children had grown up by the time I really found AA and got some help. And I want to tell you that we knew nothing in those days about confrontation, which is a term that I do not like to hear used in Al-Anon or AA. But I was confronted. And these children did it because they had been talking to a woman in AA who later became my sponsor. And they said, you can't do anything about your mother's drinking. They didn't know this. In the meantime, they had lost their father. And his was related to alcoholism. His good friends, the doctors, didn't want to say so, but it was. And so they said, you will just have to release her and let her do whatever she wants to do. If she's going to drink herself to death, she will drink herself to death. And each one of these children came to me and said it in a different way. My daughter said to me, Mother, I have failed to do things that I am duty-bound to do for my husband and my family because I've been afraid to go out of town for fear I'd come back and find you dead. I would lock myself up in my house and drink. And my son came and said, Mother, I'd do anything in the world for you. I'd spend my last cent for you if you had a bad heart or if you had a stroke. But I have great responsibilities. I have a large family, and I have a business. And if you want to drink yourself to death, I think you've got enough money to drink yourself to death if that's what you want to do. And so you know what they were saying? It's up to you, old gal. It's up to you. And nobody can get you sober but you. And nobody can get you drunk but you. And if that's what you want to do, you just go ahead and do it. And this was the point in which I saw me in a moment of truth. Now, I may be peculiar in many ways, but I imagine this is a peculiar situation. I had a non-alcoholic sponsor. I had a dear friend who loved me in spite of my alcoholism and who kept telling me about AA. She had never been to an AA meeting. She read the article in the Saturday Evening Post. And she made some investigation. She cared about me enough to find out something about it. And she got me, this is where I didn't know where the idea came from to call AA or to get to AA. I had been very drunk for a long period of time. And I knew I had reached the point where I would either have to die or get well. And so I tried. I could not see well enough. I could not coordinate well enough to find the number in the phone book. And so finally this daughter came and found the number for me. I dialed a number, but I was not dialing it correctly. And I told her, she went on out of town on a business trip with her husband. And when she came back, she came home and found a fairly clean house and a fairly clean mother. And I said, I want to go to AA, and I can't get anybody to answer the phone. And she dialed it for me, and the woman who later became my sponsor, some of these old-timers up here knew Becky. And Becky later became my sponsor, and she said, well, come on up, honey. And nobody could say honey like Becky could say honey, isn't that right, Mickey and Jim? And so I never went to the grocery store with my hair in curlers. The first time I went in the Five Points Club room, my hair was in curlers, but I was clean. And somehow I think alcoholic women will know what I'm saying. I wanted to feel clean. Drinking like I did made me feel dirty, even though I didn't get out, and I'm grateful that I was. Somebody said a bedroom drink. I said, oh, no, I had a bottle in the bathroom and the dining room and out in the back alley, but this was what this lady summed me up as, was a bedroom drinker. And I'm grateful, don't think I'm not, that I did lock myself up in my house and drink. It saved me a whole lot of trouble, I'm sure. But anyhow, I every time I quit drinking, I wanted to be clean because I felt dirty. I know that in my drinking I didn't shampoo my hair or take care of myself like I should. And so I went up to 5 points in the middle of the week with my hair. We used to do pin curls. Some of y'all may be too young to remember pin curls, which wasn't quite as bad as these pink rollers we now use. But anyway, I went up there in a bandana with my hair in pin curls and a clean little cotton skirt and blouse on. And I sat down with my sponsor and took somewhat of a fifth step with her, not like I did later. But every time I'd tell her how I felt and how bad I was and all these horrible things I had done to myself and to my family, she'd taunt me. And I didn't know that was humanly possible. And this went on for quite some time. My daughter had taken me up there because I was not physically able to drive my car. And so she went to get me some literature and my daughter some literature. And while I was there, this beautiful woman in the very finest of clothes came in and sat down and started. She came in to get her cup of coffee before she went home. And she sat down and talked to me. And that's where she said, "Oh, you were a bedroom drinker." I was a bedroom drinker. And here I saw two beautiful women in one afternoon who, through this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't have their hair in pin curls because they didn't feel dirty anymore, and who were dressed up and looked real pretty and like I would like to look and look like they felt like I would like to feel. And so this played a whole lot toward my wanting to come into the program. The friendliness, the being able to say, "Oh, that's not so bad, honey. That I can top you on that one. I can go you one better." And I commenced to think that maybe there was a glimmer of hope for me. And so I did like I did my drinking. I jumped in feet first. I went to my next meeting on Monday night. And honey, I was the most gussied up gal there. I'd seen these two pretty women, you know, and I had on my beads and my necklace and almost a cocktail dress, I think. You know, I wasn't real good and sober. But I was gussied up. And I went up there to the meeting, and somebody took me. My son took me. I had a Cadillac sitting in the driveway, but I went up there in an old beat-up pickup truck because that's what he was driving. And somebody was going to take me home. And so when I walked in, I thought, "Oh, Lord, I should have gone down to Tuscaloosa." Any of you out-of-state folks, that's where our insane asylum is. Because those folks in there are crazy. Don't they know how sick I am? And they're doing all that wild laughing and carrying on. And I had taken my literature home. I'd been under the care of a psychiatrist. Nobody had mentioned that God could help me, that God would help me if I asked him to. And here I was going into that beehive of laughing crazy folks. Of course, you know how your ears are when you've had your last drink on Thursday. But you know what? It wasn't long before I was laughing too. And perhaps louder than the rest of them and more than the rest of them. My second husband, whom I met through AA, walked into the hotel in Atlanta where we're having the Southeastern Convention, and Jim was leaning up against the door and says, "Have you lost Anna?" He says, "Oh, yeah, but she'll laugh in a minute and I'll find her." And so you see, thank God I too learned to laugh. There was a little item in the forum of Alcoholics Anonymous that says, thank God we can laugh, but let us not forget how we cried. And I think that's very important. That while we're having such a wonderful time, let us not forget how we cried. I did, as you have gathered, after I lost my first husband and I stayed a widow for 8 years, I went back into the workaday world. I stayed sober a year and didn't do anything but go to my meetings at 5 points. And one of the girls would say, "Oh, let's go out to Bessemer. They have an anniversary. Let's go to Eastern. They have an anniversary. Let's go to Western. They have an..." I don't need that. I go to my 3 meetings a week, and I've got a job, and I'm going back to the University of Alabama in Birmingham and take some more work in interior design, and I just don't have time to take in all these social things. I've got my big book. I come to the discussion group. I will lead the discussion. They broke a rule for me, and let me tell you, those of you in groups, this is bad business. We had a rule at Five Points when I went in that you could not represent the group as a speaker in another group without 1 year's sobriety. And they let me do it. They permitted me to do it. They encouraged me to do it. But after a year, I decided that I could make it on my own. I was doing pretty good, wasn't I? Had a pretty good job. I wasn't drinking. And I was back into the social world of things somewhat in my limited way, being a widow and being back in the workaday world with people in the same line of work that my husband had been in, where I knew most of the salesmen and factory representatives who, knowing that I was a widow, would invite me to go have a drink after work or go out to dinner. And, you know, after a year in AA, I just knew good and well that I ought to be well enough to do that. But I did not until I had been dry nearly 3.5 years, only 1 year in the program. And then this series went on and on of being invited out to eat, and I hadn't enough of the program to know what I could say or what I could do. I didn't like sherry, but doesn't that sound ladylike? So I would say, well, I can have a little glass of sherry. And one little glass of sherry, you know, I didn't like the stuff. I wasn't going to drink it. I wanted my good old bourbon again, you know. If I was going to drink anything, let it be bourbon. And so it did progress over a period of time. And I really drank a few months before I realized I was in serious trouble. I was staying off from work. My family knew I was drinking. I thought I was covering up. You know how stupid we are. But I wasn't, and I had everybody all upset again. And so I called my sponsor. See, I hadn't talked to my sponsor in a year or two. Oh, that first year I gave a lovely Christmas present and kept in touch with her in every way. And the next year I gave a little less lovely Christmas present and talked to her occasionally. And the third Christmas I forgot she's on the face of the earth because I was back into the bottle again. But you know what? I knew I could call her. Isn't that wonderful? And she said, well, honey, what do you want me to do? I said, I just feel horrible, and I'm so ashamed of myself, and I know that the only way I ever had any sobriety was through AA. And that's the only way I can get sober now. She said, well, I'll just pack my little bag, and I'll come out and spend the weekend with you. I said, no, I don't want you to do that. I didn't want her to see me. And I said, I want to go to the meeting Monday night. Okay. I said, I don't know that I can drive Monday. Okay, I will come get you. I'll just come get you, and I'll fix your supper. And she lived close to the Five Points meeting place, and she said, I'll take you to the meeting. And so, you know, Becky did. And it wasn't too long after that till I was taking care of Becky. I was very resentful when I came back into the program. Very resentful. I put the best face on it. You would have never known how I resented all you stinking people who could go without a drink and be happy. I hated you because you were happy and weren't drinking. And you know, I hated all those folks out yonder that were happy and drinking. So there wasn't anybody left to love but me, and I sure didn't love me at that point in time. That kind of included the universe, didn't it? And so I toughed it out by doing it. The things that I had done my first year in AA, emptying the ashtrays, I don't smoke and I despise that job, but I did it. I'm washing the cups, serving my term on the coffee bar. Those of you who know Five Points know they were open all day every day and had coffee all day every day. I served my evening term after my job at work was done on the coffee bar. I didn't let them talk me into talking. One of the gals who had been sober 18 years said, oh, Anna, I'm so glad you've decided to come back to us. I want you to take the discussion group next month. And thank God, I said, I cannot. I have not been sober a year. And I can't do any of these things until I've been sober a year. So if your group has some rules, don't let them break them for you. Remember what those little rules are. Each group is autonomous, we are told, and if your group has some rules, they're there for a purpose. And certainly those that we had at Five Points at that time were there for a purpose. And so I had only been sober about a year, and I formed this little nucleus of friends, wonderful, wonderful AA women. And they kept trying to get me to go to these big meetings. And so one of them said, my sponsors, who have left Birmingham and are over in Jackson, Mississippi, are chairman of the Mississippi State Convention. And I just give my eye teeth to go over there to that convention. Anna, please come go with me. And I said, oh, I don't think I can get off from work that long. And she said, well, I want to go so bad. Well, something happened in my life, and that's another story which would take another time to tell. I was very disturbed at the time. So I went, I finally asked to get off on Thursday, and we drove over. We took two of the guys, Stan B., those of you who remember him, who was kind of the daddy of our group, oldest in sobriety. Couldn't drive because of his vision, and so he went over with us. And gals and boys, I got religion. I had heard them talk about old-time religion and the grape arbor, bush arbor meetings, you know, that's where you really got it. That was over there in Jackson, Mississippi. Because I got the message. I got the message. You see how a high power works in our lives? Because of something disagreeable in my life, I couldn't handle with that little sobriety, with that little knowledge of how to cope with the situation. Here I was going over here to Jackson, Mississippi, to the Mississippi State Convention. And it was a honey, I want to tell you. And she and I got the red carpet treatment. She was Tom and Estelle's pigeon, their baby. And I wanted to meet a minister who had spoken, given one of the most comprehensive prayers for an AA group I ever heard in my life, and I have a copy of it somewhere. And I said, I'd like to talk to him. I'd like to know him better. Do you know when lunch was ready? She had a big round table in the middle of the dining room for the people from Alabama and this minister, and seated me next to him. So you see, I got the message. I got the message. And I went back home just a different person. And I went to anniversaries every time they had one. And we used to have meetings once a month for the area. I was there every time they had a meeting. And I went to a lot of meetings I wasn't even invited to. I just went to meetings. And it was perfectly wonderful. And from there, I got into service work, and I did all these things that were so beneficial to me, whether it helped anybody else or not. And I felt like I did work in this educational program, the public information series. I have been fortunate. There's some people, a man in this room who got me on a state committee to work with the state convention. I worked with the Southeastern Convention that met in Birmingham, and I've had all these privileges given to me where I got to know people all over the Southeast and well over my state. Well, then the blow struck, and I must be real hasty in telling about my Al-Anon connection. I had met this man indirectly through AA, and he was the best-looking fella. All of you know him, bear me out in that, and the sweetest fella, and the finest fella. And I was so fortunate to have him come into my life, and we got married. He was a wonderful stepfather to my children and a wonderful step-granddaddy to my grandchildren. And I was just so fortunate, and he was in the program. And we did all that. I keep looking at Mickey and what's your name? I keep looking at Mickey and Jim because this man and I had our first date at the Bessemer anniversary. And I was secretary of the Five Points group at that time, and so I had to be at Five Points a whole lot. And so we were at an AA meeting nearly every night. And he got good and sober, too. And after we'd gone together a couple of years, we decided that we'd get married. And I still wanted to put it off a while, and he said, are you afraid to take a chance on me? And I had grown up enough to say, I'm no more taking a chance on you than you're taking a chance on me. I am a recovering alcoholic just like you're a recovering alcoholic. I hope I never lose my seniority. But that's the way it is, and you're taking as big a chance on me as I'm taking on you. He began to drink after about 8 years of sobriety, and I went really crazy. I was telling somebody tonight that I was as sick. He was asking me about my dual role. I said I was as desperate and as sick when I came to Al-Anon as I was desperate and sick when I came to AA. I was not ingesting alcohol, but alcohol was controlling my life and making me utterly miserable. It colored and controlled all my actions. I lost, just shed weight. That'd be a good idea if I could do that now, but I don't want to do it that way. But I couldn't eat. I walked myself to death. And you know, this is the insanity of it. I knew where all his bottles were, in the barn and in the truck and in his garden and here, there, and yonder. And I had to run to the window to see when he's going to drink out of which bottle. Why? Because I was crazy. And you know, I'd go look at him and I wouldn't mark him and I wouldn't put any water in him. But I had to go look at him. Now, ain't that crazy? That's crazy. And at this period of my time, as I jumped ahead and told you a while ago, I was not going to 3 meetings a week. I was letting what I was doing at the hospital be my AA meeting. And I was giving out all the time. And I wasn't getting any feedback. I wasn't hearing you all tell me how you handled it. And I was getting sick working with these people. I was called into the director's office and said, we're going to set up an alcohol program here that's more like what we're seeing in other places. Would you be willing to work with it? I said, I don't know whether I can work with it every day in the week. I don't know whether I can work with sick alcoholics. And of course, my frustration was there that they got them off of booze and onto drugs or onto tranquilizers. My frustration there was that they would let other things come ahead of the AA meeting, which we were sacrificing, not sacrificing because it was doing me some good. It was my only AA at the time. That we were willing to go up there, and I was getting people from other groups to go up there. And yet, we didn't have too much input into how this thing was run, except we could hold our meeting. And I felt very frustrated and did for a long time after I quit working up there. But in my experience, 3 people have come to me, one at a state convention, one at a Tuscaloosa convention, and one at a Tuscaloosa anniversary, and one in Birmingham who said, I was introduced to the program by you at Hillcrest Hospital, so that makes my 3 years of service up there worthwhile. If there are any others, I'm grateful. If not, I did the best I could do with it at that time. But this was all I was doing. So you see how desperately I needed AA. My group was so far away. We had moved, as I told you, way out into the suburbs, and there was a group meeting in my community. And so I decided to look them up. And when I got there, there were 5 men, and they were about to lock the door and leave because they didn't have anybody to conduct the meeting. And they were going down to the barbecue stand and drink coffee. They hadn't made any coffee. Can you imagine an AA meeting and nobody making any coffee? And so when I came in, they unlocked the door. And we went in and we sat down and I said, I desperately need an AA meeting. And those guys helped me. We went, at that time, only 2 meetings a week, and they came, few in number. But they carried me along for a while. Commenced to get better, but not well at all. And I was having a hard time. I felt that I would not drink because I saw how miserable this practicing alcoholic was. And I felt that I would not drink, but I needed this input from people like you who would help me and strengthen me and undergird me and make me not feel so alone. And the guys would be just as sweet and kind as they could be. And I got to talking to a little Al-Anon, and she said, Anna, what you need is Al-Anon. So as I told you, I'd adopted Ted C. as my sponsor, so I called him up and was crying on his shoulder, and he wanted to get rid of me because he didn't know. He's an alcoholic. He didn't know what to tell me. He said, my wife's the best Al-Anon in the world. I knew that. I wasn't going to call her when I had Ted to talk to, but I did in desperation. You know what Eleanor told me? Turn him over to God. I talked to her a little while and I hung up. That wasn't what I wanted to hear. So I called Lois in the Eastern group. And I told Lois what I wanted to hear, how I was feeling. And she said, well, Anna, just turn him over to God. And I said, well, Lois, God can just come get him. Because I can't do a thing with this situation. And so gradually, I began to go to Al-Anon. And it wasn't too long after this little group that was meeting of a morning. I didn't want to miss my AA. I knew I needed that. And this little group that was meeting on Thursday morning, a little old gal came over from Georgia, and she's here tonight. I've told her many times before that she put a whole lot of backbone into that group and into me and into some of the other women in that group. And I began to get weller, not wellest. I was able to live with this alcoholic, and I was doing better all the time. And I knew better than to nag him about his drinking. But he could tell by my body language. He could tell by my silences. He could tell by my times of being real unhappy and real depressed. And even I didn't like for him to see me cry. I didn't want him to think that his drinking could make me cry. Even after I was in Al-Anon, you know, I had all these crazy ideas about it. And so the girls, and we kept having programs, and when it'd be my turn to have the program, I would talk about this releasing, because I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And because of another traumatic situation in my family life, he saw me cry. And I was just crying my heart out. And this kind, practicing alcoholic said, honey, please don't worry about that. We're going to take care of this situation. It involved his stepchild. We're going to take care of that situation. Whatever needed, we're going to do for that child. And you just find out from her what she wants to do, and we'll help her. We'll help her. And just like a light illuminating the room, with tears streaming down my face, I turned to him and I said, Aaron, I am no longer angry with you about your drinking. This released me when I released him. And I'm grateful for this because Aaron and I only had about 5 years of this peace that I felt after I could release him to the care of God. And it was with love. It was with love. I hated the drinking. And I told him early on, I don't know whether I can go to your bottom with you. I'll just have to play it by ear. My sobriety has to come first. I have to stay sober. And whatever I have to do, if it means whatever I have to do, I will do it. But we had lived together. It was 11 years of drinking before the end came. And only 5 years of it, with peace that if I could have gotten the Al-Anon program and could have released him a little sooner, we would have had a few more years of that. He was hospitalized about 7 years before. Not 7 years before that, but 7 years back from now, and the doctors told me he could die from either disease, the lung failure or the alcoholism. And of course he was fed alcohol through the IVs, and he did recover. But I was so mad at him, and the doctors told him, not because he recovered, but because of his drinking had put him where he was. And the doctors told him, you know, just like doctors told some of us that we should not drink, he was told he must not drink. So I went home, and before I brought him from the hospital, and I was angry. And I knew where all the bottles were. They were right where he had left them. I took them all out of the house. And I didn't pour them out, and I didn't throw them away. And all of a sudden, I thought, I'm going to call Jim D. I got Jim D on the phone, and I said, Jim, I told him what I'd done, and he laughed. He said, Anna, you've been in AA too long to know that'll do any good. Put those bottles back. I did what Jim told me to do. And of course, before we return to the for the 10th day visit to the doctor, the practicing alcoholic was back into the bottle again, and I was very angry. So if this time of release had not come, my practicing alcoholic would have died with me angry at him. And I know that I would be carrying a terrible load of guilt because of my anger. So you see how good my higher power has been to me, to let me have a time where I do not have to feel guilty. I cannot talk about his death. I may be able to sometime. Some of you know what happened. But I can say that I was prepared for what came when it came, that I had said, you are free to live your life. This is what Al-Anon taught me, as you choose to live it. And in my faith, death is part of life. And if you choose not to live, that is your choice. That if you choose to take your life, that is your choice. You have the right. And because of that, I do not have to feel guilty. And I have Al-Anon to thank for that. I do not ask he lead me year by year, nor even day by day. But step by step my path unfolds. My Lord directs my way. And I do not know what tomorrow holds. I only know this minute. And he will say, this is the way, by faith. Now walk ye in it. And I am glad that this is so, for today is enough to bear. And when tomorrow comes, God's grace will far exceed its care. So what need to worry then or fret? For by him the victory's won, and he holds all our moments in his hands, and he gives them one by one. Thank you.